Hi, this is Stacey Clardy, editor of the Neurology Podcast. For this week's episode, we're airing a standalone interview focusing on concussion. Specifically, you'll hear Alex Menzi interview Nathan Churchill about his paper in neurology on the acute and chronic effects of multiple concussions. I've really enjoyed following the progress made over the past 5 or 10 years on understanding the pathophysiology of these brain injuries, ranging from questioning the significance of a single mild concussion to understanding the effects of repetitive and severe traumatic brain injuries. And I've also enjoyed seeing the real-world translation of how we handle these suspected concussions when I'm watching the sidelines of athletic events. The paper that this podcast features gives us even more insights based on the yield of longitudinal studies started several years ago. I learned a lot, and I hope you will as well.
Hi, this is Alex Menzi. I'm with the Permanente Medical Group in Sacramento, California. Today, I'm interviewing Nathan Churchill and the Neuroscience Research Program at St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto, Canada. We're going to discuss his paper published in Neurology titled Acute and Chronic Effects of Multiple Concussions on Midline Brain Structures. Good afternoon, Nathan. Thank you for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Alex, and thanks for having me.
In one or two sentences, can you tell our neurology audience what your research teaches us about concussion and how this adds to the growing body of research on the effects of concussion on the brain?
Sure. So one of the big unanswered questions in concussion research is, to what extent does the past history of concussion affect the brain's ability to recover from subsequent injuries? So in our study, we examine this question using magnetic resonance imaging to measure the brain's changes in what we think is unprecedented detail, monitoring concussed individuals from early injury up to 1 year after medical clearance. What we found is, despite these people having relatively normal clinical recovery, we found effects of multiple concussions throughout the brain's midline, including things like declines in cerebral blood flow and alterations in white matter microstructure.
Okay, so it sounds like this has really pushed our understanding of the multiple concussion effect on the actual brain structure quite a bit further. So let's go into some of the details of how this study was done. Tell us how you identified your study subjects and what you and the other authors did to discover your results.
So as far as identifying subjects, this study is actually the product of a long-standing collaboration between the Neuroscience Research Program at St. Michael's Hospital and the Sport Medicine Clinic at the University of Toronto. And so this is one of the more comprehensive programs in the country, where athletes are closely monitored throughout their participation in the program. This includes mandatory baseline testing, careful post-injury follow-up. And so we have basically a system where we can approach athletes as they're injured and recruit them in a really naturalistic way for the study design. So this is how we pulled people into the study. And originally, this was part of just a larger study looking at brain injury and recovery, and using MRI to study these recovery processes. But the clinic actually collects quite a bit of information about athletes' past history of injury and overall health. And we realized that this was an opportunity to answer this big unanswered question. You know, if you've been injured before, is there a change in your course of brain recovery? So we decided to incorporate this into the analysis. And we found, of course, the very interesting findings we're talking about today.
Great. Could you recap the results of the study?
Of course. So we followed injured athletes, scanning them multiple times in the course of injury, and then following medical clearance, we also imaged them. So up to 1 year after a complete return to play. So we acquired measurements of cerebral blood flow, of brain structure, of function throughout this recovery process. And then we examined the longitudinal changes in these different measurements and how they're affected by a prior history of concussion. And so we focus mainly on the midline of the brain because there are structures here that are highly vulnerable to the effects of injury. So we looked at blood flow in the cingulate cortex and white matter in the tissue of the corpus callosum. And then we also compared the concussed athletes to a large normative sample of athletes without recent injury, all of them scanned at the beginning of their athletic season. And what we saw was that athletes with a history of concussion had lower blood flow at early injury. And while all subjects showed a consistent long-term decline in blood flow, this effect was larger, again, for people with prior history of concussion. And this was lasting up to 1 year after full medical clearance. In the white matter, we saw a similar, albeit somewhat muted, effect, in that we saw changes in measurements of fractional anisotropy and mean diffusivity, which sort of quantify tissue morphology and swelling and injury effects. And these effects were more pronounced for people with a history of concussion, even at the time of medical clearance to return to play.
So what does this mean clinically for the athletes? So if somebody has a change in blood flow to these midline structures, do they notice something from a clinical cognitive perspective?
So that's the interesting finding. So as far as we can tell, based on comprehensive clinical testing, they're performing comparative to somebody who's only at their first concussion. And this might be just a function of the testing. I mean, a lot of this is sort of screening and looking at symptoms and basic cognition. But it might be that this is more of a physiologic sensitization than a specific deficit that can be measured at this point. That being said, the affected brain areas do have some pretty important implications for sports and participation. We saw things like effects in the posterior mid-cingulate, which is critical for balance and coordination and spatial orientation. And some of the long-term effects were in the posterior cingulate, which plays key roles in higher-level cognition, so things like memory and planning.
So it sounds like there's a lot of different pretty important structures that you found an actual change in blood flow to. And so what kind of difference in percentage of blood flow did you find in your concussed versus your control subjects?
Well, the relative size of the effect depends on the brain region and time after injury, but the average varies between 4 to 18%, which can be quite large on the far end, with the history of concussion athletes obviously showing the bigger effects.
Okay, so let's put these results into the context of what we already know about concussion and repeat concussions. Do you have any analysis that tells you what the cerebral blood flow difference in the cingulate and corpus callosum means for the recovery or time to recovery? Were you able to extrapolate anything from your data there?
Yeah, so in terms of effects we're seeing here, this is building on existing knowledge. So we've known that concussion disrupts cerebral blood flow acutely, and these effects tend to last beyond medical clearance. So the main target here is just to ask, does this effect tend to be amplified for people with a prior concussion? And so here we see that it actually has long-lasting effects on how the brain recovers after their injury, which then further suggests there might be accumulating effects if they have, two, three, four concussions. So clinically, we're not seeing anything right now that says these people are doing worse. Again, there's a fairly comprehensive battery of symptom, cognitive balance, and vision testing, and these athletes all perform normal, and they've returned to fairly demanding sport activities. So for all intents and purposes, the brain is adapting well. But it does raise the question of, as multiple concussions accumulate, is there a threshold where deficits start to appear? And then further, is there a potential long-term consequence of these repeated injuries?
So earlier in the interview, you mentioned mean diffusivity and fractional anisotropy. Could you describe what that means for our listeners?
Yeah, of course. So as part of our brain imaging protocol, we're collecting some scans that are sensitive to water diffusion. That is to say, the microscopic patterns of water movement in the brain tissues. And so we can summarize these patterns of movement using different measurements, one of which is mean diffusivity, which essentially summarizes how freely the water moves in the brain tissue. And then fractional anisotropy measures whether this movement tends to have a preferred direction. So we can use these measures to probe changes in the local cellular environment of the brain by comparing them to normative values. So again, for people who haven't been recently injured and are otherwise in generally good brain health. And this is especially true in white matter, where the patterns of water diffusion are fairly stereotyped due to the structure of the myelinated fiber bundles. So in our study, we found that there were differences in the post-concussion changes in diffusivity, depending on whether you've had a prior history of concussion. Now, it's worth emphasizing that these measurements are somewhat nonspecific. You can see microstructural changes due to things like edema, neuroinflammation, or demyelination. But whatever the mechanism, it supports the fundamental premise that multiple concussions have a cumulative effect on the brain.
Okay, so a lot of structural changes, if I'm understanding this correctly, but we're not seeing a direct clinical impact since these athletes seem to be getting back to their normal activities and doing well at that. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good. So could you please summarize the meaning of these results in this research and where it's going to go from here? Do you have any longer timelines planned to check to see if there's atrophy of these regions or anything like that down the road, or what's next for this research?
Yeah, that's absolutely the key question. I mean, we know based on previous imaging studies of retired pro athletes in high-risk sports like football, they tend to show declines in gray matter and corresponding functional and clinical issues. So there is a question of whether the athletes in question in this study with multiple concussions, are they at risk for these issues over the long term? And if so, is there some kind of threshold at which we should be concerned? So, you know, the findings do warrant further investigation, but we do need to scrutinize this over a longer term, multiple years. We're currently planning the next course of action because this is absolutely an important follow-up question and needs to be tied to functional outcomes. I mean, we don't want to raise alarm bells if these people are doing just fine over the longer term. It may be that the brain is adapting. I mean, it's a remarkably plastic organ, but the results here suggest we can't ignore this possibility and it needs to be scrutinized further.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Nathan, and for sharing your expertise with us. I've been speaking with Nathan Churchill about his paper published in Neurology titled Acute and Chronic Effects of Multiple Concussions on Midline Brain Structures.
This is Jose Merino. Don't forget to look at neurology's three subspecialty journals, Neurology Genetics, Neurology Neuroimmunology and Neuroinflammation, and Neurology Clinical Practice, as well as our mini-sites on equity, diversity, and inclusion, global neurology, and innovations in care delivery. Please check out this week's journal, which features a special article examining the ethical implications of the use and abuse of social media in healthcare, as well as a study investigating the association of immigration with stroke incidents. You will find these and other articles in this week's issue. Thank you again for listening and have a great week.
The views and opinions of the participants in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the journal Neurology or the AAN. Disclosures of the participants are included in the show descriptions, reached by a link on the neurology.org website.